Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And our co-host, Haley Bird Willett, remains out on maternity leave. We're happy that she's getting the rest and family time that she deserves. In this episode, we're going to be talking about, what do droids deserve? What rights do they deserve? Are they sentient? Are restraining bolts immoral? Do droids need a union? We're going to be delving into this thorny topic, talking a little bit about what we see throughout the Star Wars saga. And let's just kick things off with the big question, which is, are droids sentient beings? How do we factor in the fact that they are programmed? They are computers. They are programmed to behave a certain way, and that over time, the accumulation of their experiences does give them opinions and attitudes. And we know that, you know, it's recommended that you should wipe your droid's memory to prevent that from happening. But all of that ultimately is a result of programming as opposed to natural life lessons. How does that factor in, Grace, when you think about this question of sentience? Are they fully sentient, or is there a little bit of a wrinkle there?
Well, it's the age-old sci-fi question of whether robots, artificial intelligences, are sentient. I think that droids are sentient, and that the idea of programming combined with experiences is actually pretty similar to the human experience as well, where, I mean, our brains are programmed in a certain way and our personalities are formed based on the world around us. So I think that there is a very good case to be made for droids being sentient. And I think that in some instances, Star Wars wants you to think that they are sentient and are just as much of an individual and a character as any other human or alien character. But they only want you to think that when it's convenient. So like R2 and 3PO are sentient for the purposes of the story in, I'd say, the prequels and the Clone Wars especially, and in the original trilogy a little bit less so. But battle droids, for example, are pretty much being passed off as comic relief. Even though if we assume sentience of one, we should assume the sentience of the other. So I think the answer is yes, and that in and of itself raises some thorny questions about how they're treated in this universe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I like the point you make about how computer programming is really just a sort of a silicon analog to the biological programming that we get through our genetics. We all start off with certain genetic predispositions. There's things in our own code, if you will, our carbon-based code that sets us up to be a certain way, even if we change over time through lessons that we learn. So I do think you're right about that. And, you know, I think in Star Wars, one of the interesting things, and this is from the expanded universe, which I said, I think a couple episodes ago, that I wasn't going to lean on too much, but I will say one thing that they did that was interesting is there are different, this actually might be canon, there are different classes of droids. So, you know, your protocol droids are pretty advanced. I think they're like class 3 or 4. Your worker droids, the ones that are sort of just lifting boxes, are class 1. And the difference is really just about what is in the computer brain, like how much autonomy and intellect do they have? Do they just need to be able to perform certain physically repetitive tasks, or do they actually need to be able to reason and interpret the behaviors and the opinions of sentient beings, for example, in a diplomatic setting? So Star Wars has grappled in the past with the idea that different droids are equipped at different levels to engage with other beings and also to have free will. So there is a little bit of that already in the universe. And listen, I think you're right that we are meant to think of R2-D2 and C-3PO in particular, and I would add in, you know, Chopper and L337 and some of the others, K2SO, you know, they're main characters. They are part of the story. They're driving the story. Sometimes they're comic relief, but sometimes they have a heroic moment. You know, sometimes they get to be treated like our biological heroes do. And then you have the battle droids, who, as you said, are really, in a lot of cases, they're there for comic relief. Certainly, you know, they are there to be morally comfortable, you know, battlefield victims. You're not supposed to have any qualms about watching them die because they're not people. They weren't raised by parents who wanted the best for them. They didn't go to school, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess then the question, Grace, is does it matter that they didn't go through all those biological sort of milestones of life, that they don't have a history in a lot of cases, that they're just switched on to perform a task? I mean, if they can develop opinions about what they see going on around them, if they can reason and have free will, is that all that's necessary for sentience?
I would think so. And I think that self-awareness is an important part of that as well. And you see that with battle droids. A lot of their comic relief comes from them assessing the situation as being unfavorable and going, you know, oh no, that's something, they're about to be killed by a Jedi. And I think that the fact that they're able to recognize the world around them and aren't just mindless automatons does put in that little wrinkle into it, where no, I think it's different from killing humans or animals or aliens, but it's not like morally okay. It's in the sense that you are exterminating another being who is self-aware and aware of the world around them. And able to think and reason and have some concept of free will, like, that's bad. And there are some moral implications there that I personally don't think Star Wars does enough to delve into.
Yeah, and you could almost say that the battle droids are more pitiable than a lot of other soldiers we see. You know, the clones would perhaps be a close second, but you know, the clones, while they were programmed, are also programmed to, at a certain point, develop the capacity for independent thinking. That is one of the things that's the selling point. That's why they're better than battle droids, is because they can think on their own. And we see that at least one of them, over time, decides to leave the clone army, uses that free will to say, I don't want to do this anymore. The battle droids, while they do, at a certain point, start making their own choices, the notion of programming, the notion of behaving within certain parameters, it's much more literal for them. And so they actually have less of a choice, you could say, than the clones. And so, yes, they're on the side of darkness, but they're not choosing to fight that war. We also never really see them, with the exception of, I think, a few comic relief moments in the Clone Wars, we never see them relishing the fight that they're in. We don't really get any sense that they want to be doing what they're doing. We certainly, you know, hear them repeating the stock lines that they are supposed to repeat about, you know, we're not taking prisoners, you know, surrender, Jedi. I mean, they certainly go through the motions, but I don't know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know that we really see any indications that they have sort of grabbed onto their mission in the way that the clones have.
I think that is, for the most part, a correct assessment. I would differentiate, you know, regular battle droids with the, I don't remember what they're called, but like the command droids, the one that come up with strategies. And they have like kind of three red eyes and they have a really deep voice and they feature a lot in the Clone Wars. And they generally seem to be like enjoying the fight and coming up with ideas that would stump the Jedi. And then of course they are for the most part unsuccessful. But I think battle droids, the kind of rank and file, they don't really seem to be very engaged in the fight beyond just being programmed to do it. And I think, too, something worth mentioning is that battle droids have more personality than the more intense droids, like the Droidicas, or the ones, I can't remember.
The super battle droids?
Yeah, those, yes. They don't really talk at all. They're just kind of there to look menacing. It's the not super battle droids who are there to crack jokes and then die.
Yeah, I was thinking about how we see the droids behave, and I think you're right. You know, there are very few instances where we see anything anthropomorphic about the super battle droids or the droidicas in terms of their behavior and their reactions. I think in The Phantom Menace, when Anakin is in the Naboo fighter and he's about to take off and he is saving the Naboo guards by shooting at the droidicas, there's like one moment, I think, where the droidicas are trying to run away, and you get that kind of the physicality of them sort of being panicked and fleeing, like, as he shoots them. But other than that, yeah, I don't think that we see them express any of the, you know, emotions, if you will, that the B1 battle droids do. Especially the super battle droids are really portrayed often as the sort of the SWAT team. You will often see them pushing the B1s out of the way, but it's this very mindless kind of like, I'm just charging off to battle, get out of my way, I need to go shoot the clones thing. You see it in a little bit in Attack of the Clones. You see it a lot in the Clone Wars. Again, that's very much a rote programmed behavior. That is not the kind of individuality that we see, the kind of hesitation and fear even that we and excitement that we see from the regular battle droids.
And again, I think to get meta a little bit here, that's partially it's not really well thought out necessarily for plot purposes. It's just like, you know, it makes sense to have a little bit of comic relief here. And it makes sense for these super battle droids and extra armored droids to just kind of seem like they're following along with their programming. I don't think that we're supposed to be delving into the thorny issues of droid sentience and levels of droid sentience. We're just kind of supposed to see them as a convenient and disposable army that it's acceptable for us to watch die on a grand scale. And I think that the use of clones and droids as kind of these proxy armies inadvertently both really highlight how messed up it is to use slave armies, essentially. There's a question about
how it's acceptable to use.
The use of clones is more or less ethical than the use of droids, but I think, regardless of where you fall on that front, it's still clear that creating armies specifically to be used as cannon fodder isn't a good thing, no matter what happens. So wanted to get your thoughts on that, too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you're right that we're not supposed to think about the droids as moral actors or as people, you know, with lives that are ended on the battlefield. But yeah, I mean, the clones present a similar question, and yet we don't really question their sentience. I mean, I don't think there's any debate that the clones are people. Part of that, obviously, is that the TV show very much presents the war from their perspective. We see them starting families and getting haircuts. I mean, there's a conscious effort to show that they're people. There's no effort really to do that with the battle droids. I'm racking my brain now because I don't know if there's ever an episode where there's a droid that, like, through some quirk of fate, gets separated from the army and develops a personality or anything like that. Now, we know that it is possible for that to happen in, you know, in the books, for example, in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath trilogy, which is set in the New Republic era. there's a sidekick droid character of one of the heroes who is a sort of a rebuilt hodgepodge of droid parts built around a B1 battle droid brain and head. That's obviously a very different circumstance. In what we're talking about here, there is not really, I think, any example of a droid that goes off and develops a personality. And I think that's very telling as far as what the creators want us to think about and what they don't. It's not that they're trying to distract us from this in some nefarious way. It's just that they're not presenting this as a moral question for us. And on the other hand, of course, the clones, they're very much presenting that as a moral question, but that's more about agency as opposed to sentience.
And I don't think that they satisfactorily answer the questions about the clones either. They present them as worthy of consideration as individuals, and you know, they get their own hairstyles, they have their own personalities and names and ways to differentiate them, but ultimately they are being used as a slave army, and in the end they are used in the same way that droids are, where their programming is essentially hijacked by Order 66 and they lose whatever semblance of free will that they did have, and are forced to carry out orders that before that programming was triggered would have seemed impossible to them. And so I think that the clones and the droids share more in common than they do even on the surface of just being two armies that are used as a proxy in larger conflicts. But in the end, very tragically, neither army has that level of free will that is able to break out of their programming, and in the end they are treated by the people who created them very similarly as cannon fodder and nothing more.
And that of course is ironic because the whole war is orchestrated by someone who is playing on the sort of the habits of the Republic and the Jedi, which he knows that they can't break, much like, you know, the clones and the droids are forced to fight this war through the circumstances of their birth and their creation and their assembly. The war itself is being masterminded and being puppeteered by somebody who is exploiting the sort of the things that people on both sides can't help but do. And so there's that second level there of there's not, like, they have free will, but they're all acting unknowingly within this grand plan. So they're trapped too. Even though they may not have been grown in a vat or built in a factory. So there are multiple layers of tragedy there. You know, we've talked a lot about battle droids. There are obviously a lot of other important droids in the saga, and I think it's safe to say that most of them, especially on the hero's side, they get a lot more agency and demonstrate a lot more free will, but at the same time, they are still formally in a servant role, right? I mean, C-3PO is a protocol droid. You know, he's an attaché to, you know, first Padme and then Leia. He's a worker. He is an employee in a sense of her. And we'll sort of get into the question of employment in a minute. But you know, even R2-D2, who very, as I've talked about before, is very much the biggest star of the entire franchise. He is a navigator. He is a Swiss Army knife. I mean, he doesn't get to really choose what he wants to do. And I'm just wondering what you think the story as we see it. What are the questions that it presents about whether they have, you know, agency, whether they're sentient beings? Does the rebellion treat them? Does Luke treat these droids like they are people?
I think generally speaking, for the most part, 3PO is treated more poorly than R2. And part of that is because he's just really annoying. So it's often played off as comic relief. But his role in both the original trilogy and the prequels seems more servantile. Then R2, who is fighting often, both in the Clone Wars and in the original trilogy, and is kind of seen as more of an essential crew member, and his talents are valued more than that of a protocol droid, which also, side note, brings up an interesting question about what we value in our society and kind of the what is considered to be useful, but I digress. But I think that R2 is treated with a bit more, I wouldn't say respect, because I don't know if he's necessarily respected by Luke. I feel like he's more respected by Anakin. But he's certainly treated more as an integral member of the team, although that doesn't necessarily translate to him receiving the same kind of dignity that human and alien characters do.
Yeah, there's that great scene in Revenge of the Sith where they're going up the elevator on Grievous' ship, and Anakin is telling Obi-Wan, you know, no more, like, loose wire jokes. You know, he's doing his best. And that's not something that you say about a vacuum cleaner, you know? He's thinking about R2. The moment is a little bit humorous for us, but, you know, I think that's part of the Obi-Wan Anakin banter, is he's sort of sticking up for his friend a little bit there. And I think you're right that, you know, certainly, especially in the Clone Wars, I mean, we see that they are joined at the hip, that they care a lot about each other. There's that great story arc in the Clone Wars where R2 is lost and Anakin has to be talked down off the ledge by Mace Windu because he wants to go out and find him. And Mace is like, you know, it's just a droid. And I think that's one of the starkest examples we get of a sentient being caring for a droid in this franchise. Of course, L337 being another great example.
Yeah, I think so as well. There are many examples in the Clone Wars of Anakin's close relationship with R2. There's that dynamic with Mace as well, and eventually Mace comes around to R2 being useful. There's that series of episodes, I think it's in the first season, where R2 is replaced for some reason, I can't remember why, with another droid, and the other droid turns out to be a separatist spy, so he's, you know, not a good droid from the Republic's perspective. But Anakin is a real jerk to the new droid, and he just misses R2 so much, and I think that really does speak to this bond that they have and the sense that they very much have a partnership in a way that isn't really replicated with other Jedi and droids, particularly because Anakin violates protocol by letting R2 retain his memory, which is dangerous for battle purposes, but at the same time allows R2 to develop more of a personality and arguably more of a depth of knowledge about the war and the battles itself.
I wonder if you have thoughts about the L3 dynamic and how Lando treats her, and also just kind of what the movie is trying to say. This is another example of droids, I think, being somewhat treated as comic relief, but listen, the creators had to have known that this was going to spark a conversation about droid rights and about whether really she's just sort of ahead of her time. You know, first on the Lando piece, I mean, do you think that he respects her, or do you think that he does sort of see her in much the same way that, you know, Han sees 3PO?
It's an interesting question, because on the one hand, no, I don't think that he respects her. But at the same time, I think that he doesn't respect her in the same way that he wouldn't respect a human. Like, he thinks of her as a sentient being on her own, I believe. He just doesn't respect her. So on the one hand, it's like, yeah, he sees her as a sentient being, which I think is more than Han sees 3PO, because he sees her as her own individual person, but still doesn't necessarily respect her or her agency. So it's a thorny question.
Yeah, I mean Leia switches 3PO off at one point when he's starting to get annoying, and I think it's safe to say that Lando would never do that to L3.
Yeah.
She's also, you know, she opens this whole can of worms about, is it unethical to, you know, what is the ethical way to have a droid workforce? I mean, is it ethical to have to put restraining bolts on droids? And this gets to this question of, much like we're seeing today with the development of, you know, AI powered robots that can, you know, think for themselves and all that, when we create things that we have to create from out of whole cloth and that have to be completely programmed through a computer, there exists the possibility for making mistakes, and we naturally want to have safeguards on their behavior. What do you think of restraining bolts as part of this broader conversation about free will and respect and sentience? Is it acceptable to put a restraining bolt on a droid? Does it depend on what the droid is doing, what situation they're in?
Yeah, I think partially it depends. I mean, my first instinct is to say that no, it's not ethical, because essentially what they have done is created an underclass of servants and creatures, metal creatures, but still beings that were created to serve. And so without thinking about their individual agency, and putting restraining bolts on them, like, there is something very, I think, disrespectful about that, about kind of emphasizing the subservience of droids and the role that they're supposed to play, that ultimately they are machines meant to be used, and that their individual wants or desires do not factor into whether they should have bodily autonomy. So as a whole, I would say that, yeah, restraining bolts are not good, but that kind of gets into the bigger question of how should droids be treated, and that's a difficult one.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if there were some biological equivalent to a restraining bolt. I mean, I guess there's, you know, hypnosis, but that doesn't really work. That's not like a real thing that has any enduring success. But if there were some biological equivalent, you know, how would we feel about using it in situations where the alternative is, you know, extreme danger or extreme risk from somebody who is not well, you know? And then you get into these questions of, does society have an interest in, I mean, it's sort of the individual versus the collective, right? I mean, if we could all benefit from neutralizing the risk presented by someone or something that is dangerous, does that outweigh their own right to be unaltered or unrestrained in certain ways? And, you know, it's a big question. It's not necessarily one. I don't think we're going to solve it here on the Hoth Takes podcast, but it does kind of raise the question of, well, in the case of droids, you kind of luck out, because it is all, at a very basic level, it's all ones and zeros. You know, droids can learn, they can develop opinions, they can even develop emotions, but you're able at a very technical level to neutralize that if you want to, by controlling the ones and zeros. And so they have the ability, and so they use it. We don't really have an analogy for that in the biological space, and so we haven't really had to grapple with it because it hasn't presented itself, but it's a huge question. You know, sticking with this idea of a droid workforce and what droids deserve, if these are sentient beings, do they deserve to be paid for their labor? Do they deserve everything that we would expect from our jobs? Or is it enough that we, you know, provide a safe place for them to power down, and that we give them oil baths and, you know, replace their parts. I mean, what do we owe them?
So first of all, I'm just going to push back a little against your argument that there is no human analog, because I think that there are human analogs for restraining bolts and sort of neutralizing people, like lobotomies and involuntary admittance into mental asylums. And these are practices that were more popular in the past than they are now. But there are examples historically of humans who are considered defective, rightly or wrongly, being abused by society and often physically restrained or mentally adjusted. And there are a lot of arguments about whether that is the right thing to do and the right way to address these issues. So I think that there are parallels there, even if they aren't as commonly used anymore.
That's true. Although you can't undo a lobotomy, yeah. Whereas you can just take a restraining bolt off. So that changes the conversation about, you know, when and how it's acceptable to use.
Well, I was thinking of lobotomy more as analog to memory wipes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess that's a separate, to me, I put that in a separate bucket, and we should definitely talk about that as well.
Mm-hmm. But as to droid rights, the first thing that I think in this conversation is important to address is that, yes, I believe droids have rights, but once you have that established, then it should be up to them how those rights are administered and those needs are addressed. So should we be paying droids? I don't know. Do droids want to be paid? Because putting a human framework or a human alien framework of what we think of as necessary may not be the same for a form of intelligence that is similar but still different from us. And this is one of those situations where I think it would be important, if we have the baseline acceptance that yes, droids are sentient individuals who are entitled to workplace protections and proper treatment, that then the next step in that conversation would be asking them what they want, which obviously cannot be done because they are fictional. And this was never really considered, I think, by most creators. But playing out the thought experiment, that's what I think should be done in that case.
Yeah. And of course, that raises the question of, well, why would they want money, or why would they not want money? I mean, in you know, if this were real, droids would exist in a world with people who made goods and provided services. And, you know, whether you're a human being or a Twi'lek or a droid, if you want a trip on a land speeder from A to B, you need to pay or provide whatever that land speeder pilot wants. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a person who's human or a person who's a droid, you know, you're going to have to provide some sort of, you know, payment for services rendered. So would droids want money? Well, I tend to think, yeah, probably, because everything that they could want, you know, in terms of fulfillment in life costs money. They're not going to get anywhere in life without being able to pay their way. And so unless they just want to sit in the, you know, wherever they work, and just power down at the end of the day and power up in the morning, and, you know, they just get maintained and kept in working order with, you know, oil baths and tune-ups and all that. If you really want to experience anything beyond the confines of your profession or your employment, you're probably going to need money. So I would imagine that they would probably say they want money.
Yeah, in that case, sure, give them money.
And you know, listen, I mean, we're obviously, as you said, this is not, you know, it's not a conversation that we can answer because we don't have droids here to answer these questions for us. However, I think that looking at how Star Wars treats droids is instructive in terms of understanding what the creators are going for. I mean, they're asking a lot of questions, and I think it's notable that in some cases, like with L3, for example, they kind of are presenting us with this question of how do we treat droids. But that seems to be kind of the exception to the rule. I mean, am I missing some clear-cut examples? I feel like that's kind of one of the rare cases where we get the sense that it's actually something that they want us to think about.
Yeah, I would say that is kind of an exception to the rule, that it isn't really something that is often brought up as an integral topic in most Star Wars media.
Another piece of this question is, you know, Star Wars does use droids and the treatment of droids as emblems of who is good and who is bad. We see, for example, that Imperial droids are frequently thought of as just basic tools that don't have any, you know, thoughts of their own. And in the Rebellion, in the Resistance, etc., there's a little bit more camaraderie with them. You know, is that good enough? I mean, to what extent does it matter that they are palling around with these droids and, you know, giving them nicknames and things like that? I mean, I think it's pretty clear that we don't really see too much nicknaming in the Imperial Army. But how much does that really matter? Is that good enough that the Rebels are treating the droids like that?
Yeah, I tend to think that it's not good enough. Like, it's better. But again, if we accept that droids are individual sentient creatures who are entitled to the same rights as everyone else, then keeping them in a subservient position, but, you know, giving them a cute nickname isn't necessarily enough. And I think that a really good example of a droid who is treated very well and as his own individual entity is Chopper from Rebels. I love Chopper. Chopper's my favorite droid, partially, you know, because he's a psychotic murder bot, which is just very entertaining. But I think that Chopper is different from most droids and how they're treated, even R2, because he is genuinely considered an integral part of the crew and, like, has his own call sign. I think he is Spectre 3. So, I mean, that's third behind Kanan and Hera. That's pretty good for a droid. And is generally considered to be a part of the crew and part of the family. And I think that's something that you don't often see to that extent in Star Wars media, to have a droid who is fully integrated into whatever community it's part of, and genuinely considered by its partners to be an equal, even as is also a droid. So wanted to get your thoughts on that as well.
Well, I think you're right, and we certainly see Chopper, you know, behave much more like a member of a family than most of the other droids that we see. Part of that might just be that they're all afraid of pissing him off because he is, as you said, he has, I think Reddit concluded that he has one of the highest kill counts of any character in Star Wars, at least from what we've seen on screen. As I recall, there are a lot of, like, full-size Star Destroyers that he, like, is instrumental in blowing up. And so that's a lot of people. I don't know how many Death Stars that is, but I think his kill count is quite high, so there might be a little bit of fear there. But no, I mean, on a more serious note, they do treat him like a member of the family. He's given, you know, he has a level of autonomy that you don't see with a lot of other droids. I mean, I think, aren't there, like, episodes of Rebels where he just, like, will refuse to go on missions?
Yeah, he just doesn't do stuff, and they're like, ah, well, okay then, I guess we won't have Chopper, and then they don't have Chopper.
And that's honestly you don't see that with other droids. And while they do sometimes have Chopper along for the ride, and they'll say, you know, Chopper, open the door, or, you know, Chopper, do this or do that. I mean, they definitely give Chopper instructions, but, you know, they do that to the other members of the team. I don't think that in and of itself proves that they think of him as a tool. It's a mission-oriented family, so there's a lot of that going in all directions. Yeah, I think this question of autonomy, in terms of choosing where you want to go and what you want to do, we really don't see that with droids a lot. And in fact, one of my favorite Star Wars comics was an issue of, I can't remember if it's the current mainline Star Wars comic series from Marvel or if it's the previous one before they rebooted, but C-3PO gets kidnapped at some point, lost on a mission or whatever, and R2 basically sneaks away from the Rebel base and goes to rescue him and, you know, doesn't have permission, steals a ship, goes off, and there's these great panels where I think it's Imperial Forces. I don't remember if it's Pirates or Imperials, but whoever it is, they're looking at the security camera footage as R2 is just going on a rampage through the base, and they're like, oh my god, it must be like an army. There must be hundreds of people here because he's just causing all this mayhem. And it was really, first of all, an endearing example of this droid actually has feelings about another droid and is willing to risk his own life to save this other droid, but also, you know, a very notable example of R2 calling the shots. You know, I mean, he has to sneak away. He doesn't have permission, but he's still choosing his own mission. He's choosing his own path. And I think that we don't see enough of that, especially from those, you know, big sort of hero droids like R2.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that there isn't enough space given to droids for them to execute their own autonomy. And even in the much maligned droid-centric episodes of Clone Wars, it's not really about R2 and 3PO going off and doing something on their own as much as it's, you know, they're given a mission and hijinks ensue. I think even in those droid-centric episodes, it's not necessarily them showing their own autonomy so much as them reacting and then dealing with a situation in which certain directives have been given. So, yeah, I think that in general, there should be more examples of droids exercising their autonomy and going on missions or not going on missions based on what they want, and that there's just really not enough of that in general.
Do we need to see a droid union or various droid unions, you know, the droid fighters union, the droid, you know, load lifters union, the droid taxi drivers union?
Heck yeah, I'm down. Unionize the droids. Droids have rights. If droids went on strike, like, the galaxy would cease to function. They are so dependent on droids for pretty much every aspect of life. And when there's something that is that integral, that is also sentient, then, you know, yeah, they should have a union. Heck yeah, droid rights.
And this also raises the question of, what constitutes, you know, if we're going to say all droids are sentient, I mean, where's the dividing line between an appliance and a droid? I mean, especially in Star Wars, where, you know, you have smart, you know, kitchen equipment that can decide on its own when to make your, you know, your calf. I don't remember if they're calling it coffee again, but I mean, this is a real question of all of these. I mean, some of the vehicles have, I mean, certainly, you know, the Millennium Falcon, you know, has droid brains in it. So it's like, what constitutes a droid, and where do you draw the line between, you know, mechanical life forms and true, you know, tools?
Well, I would generally categorize ships in general as mechanical life forms, given that they often have a level of artificial intelligence that is necessary to keep the ship functioning. And I don't necessarily think that ship rights look the same as droid rights. Like, I don't know if you would want to pay a ship individually, but I do think that ships can be considered as droids under the same umbrella of having a certain level of autonomy and understanding. And I don't know, I don't think it would be that hard to distinguish between a smart toaster and a droid. Like, we have that technology in the here and now. Like, do you think a smart fridge is its own creature? Probably not. And, you know, now I'm gonna get murdered by a smart fridge for disrespecting its autonomy. But I think that it's not that difficult to distinguish between the two. And maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm seeing it as too simplistic, but I don't know, I feel like it wouldn't be that big of a problem.
And you have to imagine that there are all kinds of, like, classes at, you know, Coruscant University about these ethical questions. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, in universe, we have, you know, L3 and this idea of droid rights. And the best evidence we have, I think, in Star Wars is that this is not a settled question, that we don't have a droid rights regime in place, that this is an active topic of debate in the universe.
Yeah, I mean, sure, it's fun to imagine salons in Coruscant where all these great minds are talking about, do droids deserve rights? You have to imagine that this is an in-universe question that has partisans on both sides. But it's not a topic, I think, that gets explored sufficiently.
Yeah, I mean, I've said for a while that I would love to see some kind of, you know, limited run series just about what does R2-D2 do when he, you know, chooses to go off on his own missions? I mean, what kinds of adventures does he go on? Because I think part of the allure of that kind of character, especially not just a droid, but a droid that doesn't speak in a recognizable language, is that you don't really know what they're thinking a lot of the time. And when you do get an insight into what they're thinking from how they behave, that is really compelling because you don't have their internal monologue. There was, I guess, the only counterexample is the short story in the anthology collection From a Certain Point of View for A New Hope, where he is basically sabotaging the red droid so that it will malfunction and Luke will have to pick him when they're being sold by the Jawas. And they actually, those two droids have a conversation about, like, listen, I'm on this mission and I have to do this and I don't have time to explain myself to you and blah, blah, blah. That's, I think, the only example, certainly in canon, of getting inside the mind of an astromech like that and getting a sense of what it's up to. So I would love to see more adventures, you know, from the point of view of the droids, perhaps with, a little bit of a different focus than the Clone Wars episodes. I didn't hate them, but I certainly didn't love them. But I would love to see more adventures from the point of view of droids.
And that's, I think, something that Rebels does better than Clone Wars, because there are some droid perspective episodes. That's basically Chopper and AP5, who, much like Chopper is the jerk version of R2, AP is the jerk version of 3PO. A lot very similar, just like a bit more snarky and sarcastic and generally a-hole-ish. And in the episodes where they kind of just go on their own adventures, it's usually just them going on their own adventures. They're not really given direction, they're just doing things. I think that those are really fun, and see a bit more of the autonomy and agency that they have than you get in Clone Wars droid focused episodes, I would argue.
Yeah, and I think part of the fun comes from the fact that they're underestimated and they're overlooked, so they can do things that organic beings for the most part just would not be able to do. I mean, that certainly adds an element of intrigue to the stories.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, is there anything I didn't get to that you want to make sure we mention for the fine folks?
I don't think so. The one droid we didn't really talk about. Well, actually, there are a couple droids we didn't really talk about that I think are big droids in the canon of Star Wars, like BB-8, whom I pretty much see as like a puppy. And so does everyone else in the series, in the sequel trilogy. And I think it's IG-11. Is that the one from Mando?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Who I think is more interesting than BB-8 because that's an example of a droid being reprogrammed from being an assassin droid to basically being a nursery maid, but then in the end is able to make his own decisions about how he wants to live his life. But I think that that fits into conversations that we have had already in this episode, but they are worth mentioning.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, and I think, you know, BB-8 is another example of a very different type of personality, but as you say, we certainly don't see a ton of depth there, and most of what we see behavior-wise is sort of, again, very puppy-ish behavior in terms of attachment to, you know, in particular Rey, so I'm definitely glad you brought that up. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. This was kind of a dicey topic, a very loaded topic, but hopefully we did it justice. We want to thank everybody for listening, obviously, and if you'd like to write in, let us know what you thought of this episode, perhaps any philosophical considerations that we missed. Please do so. You can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us. We are at hothtakes. You can also send us messages there individually. I am at Eric Geller. Grace is at Grace_Seegers, and Haley is at Burdenator. Haley made our logo and banner art, and I edited this episode. I also put together our music, and we do want to point out for legal purposes, all Star Wars themes and sound effects are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, and that is at hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, please send it to a friend or family member. We are available on all the major podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.